The following is an excerpt from the Science Podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
Finally today, I'm here with online news editor David Grimm, who's here to give us a rundown of some of the recent stories from our daily news site, news.sciencemag.org. So, Dave, our first story here is about some of the earliest social inequality.
Right, Carrie. Those of us, especially in the United States, may be familiar with the recent Occupy Wall Street movement, which has sort of pitted the so-called 99%ers against the 1%ers, the point being that there is this deep divide in modern society between the people that have a lot and the people that don't have a lot. And the question this new study is really asking is, when did that start? When did social stratification really begin in human society? Most scientists agree that social stratification happened when people stopped their hunting-gathering lifestyles, where you really couldn't own that much property because everything you had, you're really taking along with you. And when we really settled down, set up farms, and therefore, this is really the first time we actually sort of own property, maybe even considered ourselves maybe even owning the land. And then you would start to think, well, maybe people that had more land or better land all of a sudden are differentiating themselves from the people that had less land or perhaps less fertile land. But the exact time point when this happened has really sort of been unclear.
And so how can we judge social equality and inequality back so far in time before we may have had kingdoms and tombs full of gold?
Well, it's a great question. And one of the things that researchers have used are things like, you know, what kind of objects were people buried with? You know, were they buried with fancy pottery and stone tools? That might be an indication that somebody had a higher status than somebody else. And researchers have seen that, but they haven't seen it sort of consistently enough where they've really able to say, well, in this particular society, this is where social stratification started, or in this particular time point. What's made it easier in this new study is a technique called isotopic analysis, where the researchers actually looked at a society that was suspected of being socially stratified, but researchers didn't really know for sure. This is a society that's referred to as the LBK. And this is a group of farmers that lived in what is today Hungary about 7,500 years ago, and they lasted for about 500 years before they were replaced by other peoples. And what the researchers did was they looked at the ratio of two isotopes of the element strontium in the teeth of these people. And the reason they looked at strontium is because strontium can vary depending on what your diet is. People that tend to live in places that had very rich and fertile soil tend to have different levels of strontium in their teeth than people that lived in places that had less fertile soil. And this is something you can track over the generations. And what the researchers found was that men in this LBK society that tended to be buried with what are called adzes, which are these stone tools, so a potential indicator of high status, also tended to have a ratio of strontium in their teeth, which indicated that they lived on very fertile soil. And they tend to be buried alongside other men that had a similar ratio. And again, the researchers sort of saw this down through the generations. And what this suggests is that you had in the society a group of people that were living on sort of very nice farmland and another group of people that had different strontium ratios that weren't living on as nice of land and weren't eating perhaps as high quality of food. And this suggests more strongly than other evidence that social stratification was in place around 7,000 years ago, at least in this population of people.
Wow. All right. Well, continuing in the 21st century, we have a story about a silent killer.
Right. What some doctors call a silent killer is actually low-level inflammation. And this is particularly a problem in people in Western societies. They have this sort of chronic low-level inflammation. A lot of it's caused by stress or obesity, sometimes diseases like herpes, other diseases that sort of stick around in the body, don't really go away, really continually stimulate the immune system, which actually isn't a good thing. And it's called the silent killer because it's kind of hard to pick up, and it can cause everything from heart attacks to strokes to diabetes to cancer. So it's not a good thing. What this new study is about is trying to figure out, does that same thing happen in less industrialized societies? And specifically in this study, researchers looked at the Shuar people who live in the Amazon of Ecuador. So this is a very low-tech society. In fact, they're really exposed to a lot of bad things growing up, parasites, viruses, other pathogens. The bad part about that is a lot of the children in the society die before the age of 5 years old. But there's a potential silver lining with this new study is bringing up is that somehow from being exposed to these pathogens really early on seems to protect them from this low level inflammation that we in the West have a real problem with.
So those that do survive beyond the age of five actually have healthier immune systems?
Exactly.
So how did they carry out the study? How does one quantitatively measure chronic inflammation?
Well, what the researchers did is they looked at something called C-reactive protein, which is a marker in all of our blood that sort of gauges your inflammatory response. So if you've got a lot of C-reactive protein, chances are you've got inflammation going on in the body. And if you've got a lot of this protein over time, it means you really have this chronic inflammation. And what the researchers did was they took a lot of blood samples from the Shuar people in the Amazon, and they found that even though they occasionally had spikes in C-reactive protein, which could just be the result of them fighting an infection, they didn't have high levels of it over time, like we see in the West, which means the adults in the society don't really have this chronic inflammatory response that we see in a lot of Western cultures.
So this all basically comes back to the hygiene hypothesis, which is a hot topic right now. And we actually had an interview about it on the podcast a few months ago.
Right, exactly. We've talked about this before. This is the idea that, quote unquote, unhealthy living conditions early on in life, exposure to disease, even allergens, can actually potentially be a benefit later in life by protecting us from disease, from things like stroke and heart attack, and even from allergies. And this study really adds more weight to that hypothesis.
All right. Well, someday if I do eventually have kids, I will let them play in the mud.
Right.
And now in our third story today, we have a totally bizarre story about a very particular scent.
Right. This is what's maybe not so kindly referred to as old person smell. And anybody who's walked into maybe their grandparents' house or a nursing home knows what I'm talking about. This is sort of an odor that people tend to associate with old people. The Japanese actually even have a name for it, which I'm not going to even try to pronounce. But if you want to look at it, you can check it out on the website. But the purpose of this new study was really to figure out, is there really a smell associated with old people? And is this different from the smell that younger people give off?
So I sense a sniffing test
right.
coming into play here.
That's exactly what they did. What the researchers did was they rounded up a group of people of a variety of ages, young people, middle-aged people, and older people. And by older people, they were talking about people that were 75 to 95 years old. They made them wear T-shirts for a few nights in a row that had these pads sewn into the armpits. And then they took these pads to another group of volunteers, and they had these volunteers sniff the pads and do a couple things. First of all, they had the volunteers guess at how old is the person do you think that this pad belongs to? And second of all, how would you rate this smell? Is this a bad smell? Is it a good smell? What does it smell like? And the volunteers were pretty good at judging what pads came from which people. They were pretty good, about 12% greater than chance in guessing the old people, and even better, about 85% better than chance in guessing that some of the other pads came from younger donors. What was actually even more surprising than that is that the volunteers rated the old person smell as the least unpleasant of the three ages that they'd sniffed.
So why would a person's scent change over the course of their lifetime?
Well, the researchers say they may have some sort of evolutionary advantage, or at least that's the reason we may have been able to evolve to distinguish these cells. The idea being, especially a long time ago, people that lived older were more desirable mates. Maybe they were more resistant to disease, somehow healthier, and this made them more desirable mates, and therefore you'd want to be able to tell just by smell, perhaps, whether someone is somebody you want to, for lack of a better word, get with than somebody else. So that's one possible explanation, although researchers really don't know for sure.
Oh, interesting. And so what else have we had on the news site this week?
Well, Carrie, for Science Now, we've got a story about a group of adults playing hide and seek and what the military applications of that are. Also a story about the age of the Milky Way and getting some more precise dates on it and more sense of actually how it formed. For Science Insider, our policy blog, we've got a story about a controversial new site for marine research. Also a story about what U.S. presidential candidate Mitt Romney thinks about science and what decisions he might make regarding the future of scientific research if he's elected president. And finally, for Science Live, our weekly chat on the hottest topics in science, this week's Science Live is about geoengineering, the plans to sort of manually tinker with the environment to perhaps forestall the effects of climate change. And next week, Science Live is about the microbiome. This is the community of bugs that live in our intestines, how our diet influences their composition, and how their composition influences our health. So be sure to check out all these stories on the site.
Great. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Gary.
David Grimm is the online news editor of Science. You can check out all of our news at news.sciencemag.org, including daily stories from Science Now and science policy from Science Insider. While you're there, be sure to check out Science Live, a live chat on the hottest science topics every Thursday at 3 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time.